Chapter 3, Things Are Not Always What They Appear to Be. Whitley Strieber was the first author to use the term screen memories in connection with UFOs and aliens. This is a memory of an event or a thing that is not accurate. Something has been superimposed over what is actually occurring, and the mind interprets it differently. Often it is interpreted in a safer and gentler way, so the person will not be frightened or traumatized. When I heard of this, I suspected it was part of the subconscious mind's defense system, its method of protecting the psyche from anything it considers harmful to remember, or to see in its actuality. Often these screen memories involve animals. I have had several cases where this appears to have occurred, where an overlay, as I call it, has been placed over the actual scene. For some reason, owls feature prominently in this phenomenon. Innkeepers of the garden Phil was startled on a road late at night when an owl swooped over the highway and then over his car. Under hypnosis, we discovered it was not an owl at all, but an alien craft and small beings on the highway that forced him to stop. His subconscious had disguised the scene in a softer way so he would not remember what had actually occurred. 53. 54. The custodians, in the case I am about to relate, overlay memories seem to be involved with missing time. I had known Brenda for several years, and she was the main connection in my work with Nostradamus. We were very involved in that work when I also began to work as a UFO investigator by using hypnosis in suspected abduction cases. One day in January 1989, when I went to her house for our regular session, she wanted to tell me about an unusual incident that had occurred in March 1988. She considered it odd, but for some reason had not mentioned it to me before. She thought I would be interested now because I was becoming more involved in the UFO phenomenon. She did not know if it was connected with UFOs or aliens, but it definitely involved missing time, and an owl. She was driving home from work in Fayetteville, a drive that normally took about a half hour, and was within sight of her house in the country when the incident occurred. The sun had set, but it was not yet dark. She came around a curve and there was an owl sitting right in the middle of her lane. It was not the normal type of brown owl that is usually seen in our area. It was brilliant white with silver highlights on its chest, and its eyes were very black. It was absolutely beautiful, and she slowed down so she wouldn't hit it. She assumed this was the type called a snow owl, which is normally seen in colder climates such as Canada or the northern states. A zoologist friend told me later that it is possible for a snow owl to be seen in Arkansas in the depth of winter, but there shouldn't be any as late as spring. This would have been a rare occurrence, if it were a real owl. When she first spotted it, it was sitting facing away from her, but it turned its head to look at her. Then it flapped its wings and flew up straight toward the truck. Its wingspan was as wide as the windshield. It startled her, and as it skimmed over the roof of the truck, Brenda twisted around to look out the back window. But there was nothing, no sign of the owl, no sign of any type of bird. When Brenda turned and looked out the front window again, she was shocked to see it was dark outside. It crossed her mind that it had certainly gotten dark fast. Totally confused, she had to turn on her headlights to drive the last quarter mile to her house. Things are not always what they appear to be. 55. When she entered the house, she looked at the clock out of habit. Instead of being around 5:30, as it should have been, it was almost 7 o'clock. What had happened to an hour and a half? She was positive of the time she left work, because she did not work overtime until summer. She thought it was a peculiar incident, and she had heard that sometimes when something odd like that happens, something has been blocked from your conscious memory. I asked if she had noticed anything else that was different. The main thing she remembered was having a strange effect on electrical appliances for a few days afterwards. This had occasionally happened to her in the past. She can't wear a watch because of her electrical field, or whatever it is. But the sensations had never been so profound or lasted for so long. This time everything electrical was malfunctioning. For several days her TV would go in or out of focus whenever she moved. At work the computer kept flipping, and the clocks and calculator were doing weird things they weren't supposed to do. She thought her electrical field was interacting more strongly than usual with appliances, and she was more sensitive to sound. Her natural hearing extends into the upper ranges beyond normal hearing. She can hear higher frequencies, and for several days she was particularly sensitive to these higher frequencies that most people can't hear. The telephone was one of the peculiarities. She said it makes a high-pitched beep just before it starts to ring, and the most people don't hear that. So she was answering the phone before it started ringing. This was confusing her boss, who said, "Please, Brenda, settle down. Let the phone ring before you answer it." She could also hear a high-pitched screech that certain security systems make in stores. It sounded so loud to her that it hurt her eardrums, although no one else could hear it. She tried to stay out of the shopping mall until things returned to normal. At home, if she picked up a clock to wind it, that was enough to destroy the clock. At work, the clocks were electrical, and she did not have to touch them. Just being in the same room with them was enough to cause them to do strange things. Those, 56, the custodians, clocks never totally recovered. The clock on the microwave at work also created a problem. It emitted loud beeps when she started to punch in the numbers on the timer. She did not have to touch it, she just had to reach towards it. These strange effects on electrical appliances continued for 4 days afterwards and then settled down again. We decided to devote this session to discovering what, if anything, happened during that missing time, instead of doing our regular experiments with Nostradamus. She didn't think it would bother her if she found out something unorthodox had occurred. When we started the session, I took her back to the latter part of March 1988, and she immediately entered the scene where she was driving her truck home. Along the way, she discussed her day's work, and that she was worried about her mother, who had recently been in a car accident. These were her thoughts as she drove. She was also tired, and anxious to get home, take a hot bath and relax. She was almost home when she came around a curve and saw something standing in the middle of her lane. She stopped the truck so she wouldn't run over it. In her conscious memory of the event, she thought she only slowed down, but she now said she came to a complete halt. Another surprise was that what she saw in the road was not an owl. D. What is in the road? B. It's hard to say. I suppose if we lived in olden times, I would call it an angel. D. Surprised. An angel? B. A being from a higher plane perhaps? I see a man standing in the middle of my lane. He glows white. All over. And his clothes appear to be white as well. D. Do you mean the glow is like an aura around him? B. Sort of. She had difficulty explaining. It's kind of like a black and white picture that's been a bit overexposed. You know, very light colored all over and white radiating out from it. D. It's not like a glow from a light. Things are not always what the apto B, 57, B, well, it's hard to describe, because it's sort of like that and it's sort of like an aura. And sort of like an overexposed picture, or all of them rolled into one. D. And his clothes are white too? B. At least that's the way they look to me. It could be that I'm not able to perceive the colors correctly, since he has so much light around him. Even his hair glows white. D. Can you see what his features look like? B. That's hard to do because there's so much light. From the best I can tell, they resemble classical Greek features like you see on classical Greek sculpture. Very even, with a level forehead and a nice straight nose, and very balanced features. D. About how tall is he? B. 6 feet, 6'2". D. He's large then. B. He's a good-sized fellow, yes. He's standing there looking around. And I can see rays coming out from his eyes. When he's looking towards me, I can't see them. But when he looks off to the side, I see these rays coming out from his eyes. I do not know the purpose of these rays. And he sees me. I've stopped so I wouldn't hit him. I didn't want to do him harm. And he came over to the truck. As he walked around toward the driver's side, he did a gesture over the truck. He waved his hand just once. A motion with her left hand, a slow wave. He did it parallel to the hood of the truck, and then swooped it up parallel to the windshield. His hand was about 6 to 8 inches above the truck when he did this. Apparently, this was what her conscious mind recorded as the owl flying low over the truck. It was obvious that the false overlay of the white owl came from her conscious mind, because in trance she had no hesitation in identifying it as a person. She never once mentioned an owl. 58. The custodians, B, and I rolled down the window to see if he needed a ride or anything. That seemed to be a strange reaction upon seeing such an unusual person. It would have been normal if it appeared as a physical human, but this did not. The expected reaction would have been to gun the motor and get out of there. It certainly seemed unusual to roll down a window to speak to the glowing being. Obviously, it did not inspire fear in her, and she felt no danger. I asked her if it bothered her. B. It was strange, but I was curious about who he was and what he was doing. And I figured if he meant me harm, he would have zapped me already. I figured with him glowing so much and with light coming out of his eyes, if he wanted to zap me from where he was standing, he probably could. D. So you're not afraid of him? B. Well, I was apprehensive, maybe a little nervous. But I wasn't panicked or anything like that. And I asked him if he needed some help, or if he needed a ride somewhere. And he said, "Oh, bless you, child. I appreciate your offering. My transportation's right over there." He gestured toward a hill that was beside the road. D. Could you see anything? B. No. I just saw the hill. It has quite a few cedar trees on it. From the way he gestured, I got the feeling that if there was anything there, it was on the far side of the hill, maybe just over the crest, where it would be out of eyesight anyway. I have driven that road many times going to Brenda's house. And after this experience I took particular note of that hill. It is not far from the road in the middle of a farmer's field. There are a few trees on top, and no houses near it. But it is not very high, so a craft could not be very big if it hid behind it out of sight from the road. Unless he had also rendered it invisible to humans. Things are not always what they appear to be. 59. B. I asked him, "Who are you? I can't help but notice that your appearance is different from mine. Are you an extraterrestrial visitor or are you from a higher plane?" And he said he was from the Council of Elders. I asked him, "What is this council?" "Councils are usually to advise or to run a group or something." And he said that various visitors had been to various parts of the Earth and were bringing back conflicting reports about how far Earth had developed. There is a group that is in favor of open contact with humankind, and there's another group that is in favor of leaving humankind in ignorance, as it is now. And since he is part of the Council of Elders, they decided he would come on his own to see how things were on the Earth. It is rather a covert-type mission, a fact-finding mission, you could call it. So they would have more information to base their decision on, whether to leave Earth in ignorance, or to contact humankind and bring them into light and health and knowledge. D. Is that what you meant by ignorance? B. Well, even though humankind suspects, and some wish and dream that there is extraterrestrial life, for the most part, so far as the officials in the governments are concerned, there is no such thing. That's what they mean by ignorance, by not accepting that fact. They have been thinking of contacting humankind in a way they could handle, that also would prove beyond a doubt that there is extraterrestrial intelligence. And they're living their own lives until such time as humankind catches up enough to be able to join them. D. Is he having this communication with you by speaking words? B. Not really. I guess you could call it vocalized telepathy. I could hear him very clearly, as if he was speaking, but his mouth wasn't moving. I am assuming he was projecting his thoughts toward my mind, but I could perceive it as a very pleasant sounding voice. D. Then what happened? 60. The custodians, B. He said he had to continue with what he was doing, and that I needed to go home. There was nothing I could do to help him. Then he waved his hand once in front of my eyes. And when he did that, I suppose with the mental powers he had, I could no longer see him. And I no longer remembered the experience as it had happened. D. I wonder why he was out there in the middle of the road? B. I never did find out for sure. I got the impression he'd been going to different places and observing humankind and everything that was going on. And I had the feeling he was curious about what would happen if he were to have a chance meeting with an average human on the road. Whether Rai would panic and try to run away, or be scared and try to harm him or anything like that. D. Well, there probably are A people who would have done that. B. That is true. But I guess you would say he was taking an average sampling. He was appearing to various humans here and there, and then making them forget the experience. But he was taking note of their reactions to his appearance, to get an idea of how humankind in general would react to definite knowledge of extraterrestrial life. D. When he was by the side of the truck, could he see any more details about him? B. Well, everything was very white and glowing. His style of clothing was basically loose and comfortable. Rather like a kaftan with a poncho over it or something like that. And he had a sash tied around his waist. His clothing seemed to have several pouches and pockets, so he could carry things with him. And it looked like he had cloth boots on his feet, and although the cloth was about an inch thick, it appeared flexible and soft. He had flowing robes on, but two or three layers, so it looked like he'd be warm, for the time of the year. It looked like they were made out of finely spun wool or something similar. D. Did he have hair? B. Oh, yes. It looked like straight white hair, trimmed on the front, and maybe shoulder length in the back. He was, things are not always what the Apto B, 61, glowing so much that I couldn't really tell if he had any particular colors around him. His skin and hair looked white, and his eyes looked silvery. And he was clean shaven. D. Did he still have the rays coming out of his eyes? B. No, not when he was talking to me. But when he was looking around the landscape, he had the rays coming out of his eyes. D. But nothing about it was frightening. It was just strange. B. Really strange, but I really enjoyed it, because he didn't seem to mind my asking questions. D. What other questions did you ask him? B. I asked him if there really was life out there, or if it was just wishful thinking on my part. And he said, yes, there really is life out there, and it is very varied. There are many different kinds of life with all types of appearances and abilities. And several different races of beings are looking forward to humans finally developing reliable spacecraft, so we can join them and be part of the galactic community. And he said that different races have particular characteristics. Some are more belligerent than the others, and some races tend to be light-hearted and humorous. And then he said something I thought was strange, yet promising, too. He said, but you'll learn all about that in a while. So I took that to mean perhaps within my lifetime humankind would reach out to the stars. D. I wonder where this council is located? Did you ask him that? B. He said it didn't have a particular location. They simply met wherever all the members decided. I got the impression there was one particular ship that was theirs. It's a very large ship, and they tended to meet on this ship most often to conduct their business. But the council members are from all different planets, to represent several different races. D. But you said he had human features. 62. The custodians. B. Yes, he appeared human. I asked him, life out there in the stars, does it come in all different unimaginable forms and features, or are they basically humanoid? He said we would find life both ways, similar to us but a little different, and so totally different that it would be hard to believe they really are intelligent life. D. You said you saw his hands. Did they seem like human hands? B. They were very large, with long fingers. On the piano keyboard he could easily span a 12th or a 13th without even straining, the way I can span a 9th or a 10th. She was using her pianist's background to make a comparison, and his fingers were long in proportion to the size of his hands. But the best I can remember, he had the same number of fingers as we have. And since he wore flowing clothing, I could not tell if there were any particular physical features that were different from us. The main thing I noticed was that he was larger than average. But then I figured that where he came from they probably have a higher standard of health. And so people would probably reach a larger average size. D. Do you mean he was taller or just bigger? B. Just bigger. Taller, broader shouldered, large hands. He had beautiful teeth. I don't think he ever went to a dentist in his life. He seemed to be very wise and gentle. And he said one of the things that frightened some of the other races is our tendency to be somewhat aggressive, and maybe a little belligerent sometimes. He said if we can learn to control this, our future will be very bright. This seemed to be the only information she could supply about the strange encounter. I knew that I could always get more by speaking directly to her subconscious mind. So I asked to speak to her subconscious. I have never been denied access. D. I am curious about this being that she saw. In actuality, did he really look the way she described him? Things are not always what they appear to be. 63. B. In actuality, he did glow the way she described. But there were some visible physical differences that he caused her to forget, or not to see to start with. I suppose you could say he had a charm cast upon himself so he would appear fully human. D. Can you tell me what he really looked like? B. His hair was white and flowing, and longer than she remembered, and the hairline was more receding. He had a very sharp widow's beak, where she perceived him as having a straight hairline like that of a young man. And he did have large hands, but they were bony, and his fingers had an extra joint in them. Instead of the fingers ending where ours do, it was as if the middle joint had been repeated, to where they bent differently than our fingers do. D. How many fingers did he have? B. He had four fingers, but he also had a double thumb. D. This was a surprise, a double thumb? What do you mean? B. Two thumbs. His hand was longer than ours, because it had more bones in it. He had one thumb in the normal position and another above it. There was plenty of room for two thumbs before the fingers started. All of this was accompanied by hand motions. D. So he had two thumbs and fingers, making six fingers altogether. B. Yes, on each hand. With long, narrower fingernails than ours. At the base where the cuticle is, it was a very sharp U shape instead of squared like ours are. D. Was his face different? B. It looked harsher than she remembered. He realized she might find his appearance frightening. His eyes were very large and glaring, because of the power emanating from them, with very bushy eyebrows above them. And actually, his eyes were totally white. There was no iris or pupil to be seen. D. I have seen blind people like that. Is that what you mean? 64. The custodians. B. Yes. Except that this white glowed with light, because of the power emanating from him. D. What about his other features? B. His other features appeared quite normal. His cheeks were rather craggy, sunken in, and he had a very strong jawline. It was hard to tell about his ears because his hair covered them. D. And his skin was actually white? B. I don't think it was really. There was so much light glowing. It was hard to tell what color it actually was. But because of the contrast between his hair and his skin, and between his eyes and his skin, it appears that his skin was darker. But it glowed with light, so it looked lighter than it really was. D. Did he have a nose and a mouth like ours? B. Yes. He had a nose and a mouth. But it's hard to say whether the teeth were the same, because he did not open his mouth when he was speaking. He was speaking by projecting his thoughts. D. But she saw teeth. B. Because the image she saw would occasionally smile. And the real image was very solemn. D. So his face didn't have expression. B. Oh, it had expression, but it never involved showing the teeth. He would quirk his eyebrows and tilt his head and such as that. But it never did involve smiling. His face did seem more narrow in front. The way his face slanted into his mouth was sharper and narrower than our faces. Ours are kind of flat by comparison. D. Was he wearing the type of clothes she described? B. He wore clothes, but they were much more complex than she described. He had a lot of metalwork and such worked into his clothing. D. What was that for? B. Various instruments and such. Some of it was just adornment. Some of it represented his rank. And some of it was remote controls for a ship and such. This was in his, things are not always what the apto be, 65, clothes, in his belt. He had something like a bandolier crossing his chest. Her hand motions indicated there were two straps, that was loaded with metal things. D. instruments and stuff like that, you said? B, more like buttons and switches and things. And it looked like small bottles, but they all had purposes. It wasn't just ornamental. If it were instruments, they were very miniaturized. D, so even the clothes were different than she thought they were. B, they were similar, with flowing sleeves and hemline. She just didn't see the instruments and what she would call the gizmos. He did not allow her to see the gizmos. D, was there a reason for that? B, yes, because humankind is technologically immature. And if they are exposed to too much foreign advanced technology too quickly, it could be disastrous. D. Man is always trying to learn new things. Do you mean we couldn't understand it or handle it or what? B. Couldn't handle it. The equivalent from Earth history would be whenever sailors discovered new island in the South Pacific, and gave the chief a gun as a gift. The chief was proud of his gift, and waved it around, saying, "Hey, look what I have." And it accidentally went off and hurt somebody, because he didn't have the knowledge of how to take care of it and use it. D, I'm thinking of the word discipline. B, no, that's not the right sense. He didn't have the understanding of how something should be applied. Because once you understand how something should be applied, the discipline comes naturally. D, so they figure it's better not to show us too much at once. B, exactly. We are considered to be an intelligent species and very highly curious. And they know if we see something and remember it, we'll try to figure out what we saw and then try to reconstruct it. D. Did he really have rays coming out of his eyes? 66. The custodians. B. Yes. The way their machinery is constructed, it can work through the body, not just through the machines. It can also use the body. And the rays coming out of his eyes could have been from either a machine that was scanning the landscape to analyze what things were made of, or it could have been rays from a machine that was tuned to find a particular element of something. There are many different things it could have been. This sounded similar to the cases in my book, Legacy from the Stars, where machinery and the body were combined. In some cases the body was wired so that it could operate the spacecraft by moving muscles. Many of the aliens in that book literally became part of their ship. I thought it might be an eerie extension of the new virtual reality games where machine and body are working together. This now appeared to be a case of not one but two overlays. The simple version of the owl that her conscious mind remembered was totally different from the two supplied under hypnosis. Apparently these alien beings have the ability to make us perceive things in many ways. Only hypnosis can reveal what truly lies beneath the surface. Can we ever know what is real and what is an illusion? D. It seems strange that he didn't know she was coming along in her truck. B. But he did know. D. Oh? I thought he was surprised. B. No. She was the one who was surprised. He knew that she'd be along. And she was one he wanted to have contact with. D. Was there a reason he wanted to have contact with her? B. Yes. The Council of Elders keeps track of certain ones on the Earth, so that when the time is right to contact humankind, these will be the ones contacted first, if it occurs within their lifetimes. For several centuries they have done this. One of the humans they felt was the most, things are not always what they're to be, 67, promising was Leonardo da Vinci. And so as each generation comes and goes, there are particular ones they watch. In case it happens during their generation they have already decided who they want to contact first. D. Was there anything particularly different about her that they were watching her? B. They look for a combination of features in the people they would like to contact first. The people must be highly intelligent. This would fit Brenda, because she has the IQ quotient of a genius, and open-minded and willing to learn new things. She certainly is open-minded or she would never have agreed to our strange experiments, as well as being spiritually advanced and in contact with the higher planes. Someone who is trying to improve themselves and who is open to new things. Someone who, even though they have obstacles in their life, overcome these in a positive way without negatively affecting others around them. Some people overcome their obstacles by tearing those around them down. But that's not the type of person they want. They want people who overcome their obstacles through positive means. D. Do they keep in touch with these people or watch over them all their life? B. Yes. They keep an eye on them all their life. And from time to time they contact them.